This podcast contains discussions of child abuse, sexual repression and sexual abuse, suicide, racism, misogyny, PTSD and PTSD symptoms, and spiritual oppression and abuse, including guilt, shame, and fear. In most episodes, we will be mentioning some of these concepts in a general way without any graphic detail. If any of these topics or other triggering topics will be mentioned in great detail, we will let you know at the beginning of each individual episode, as well as in the show notes for that episode. Roll, rolling river of time. You've healed me in too many days.
No regrets, no confusion. There'll be no pollution. I'm so thankful. Welcome back to the Leaving Eden podcast. My name is Gabriel Hakohen, and I am here with my co-host Sadie Carpenter. But I am not, Sadie Carpenter is not the only person that is here with me today. Sadie, do you want to introduce our guest?
Yes, I do. On a previous episode, I mentioned that some of the bravest and the loudest voices in the ex-evangelical and ex-IFB communities were LGBT people. And certainly one of those people that I was talking about is our guest today. We have with us Evan Jones, and he's going to share his story and answer some questions. We're going to have a nice conversation. Evan, I'm so glad you agreed to speak with us. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me on. I am looking forward to it.
And we are fellow, so we all have a lot in common. You and I are fellow podcasting parents. I know Yes. You have your own podcast as well.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do the Your Queer Story podcast, which is an LGBTQ. It started as just an LGBTQ history podcast, and it's expanded into kind of a culture and all things LGBTQ, but we still do have a heavy focus on history. So yeah, that's what we do, Your Queer Story.
Yeah, one of the things I just wanted to say is that when we were preparing to do this interview and stuff, I actually listened to a couple of episodes, and I can say that the Your Queer Story podcast is quite good. And if you are interested in that sort of content, you should definitely go check it out.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I've enjoyed your podcast as well. I'm a big history podcast listener. I like true crime, but I don't like some of the more gory, we only talk about murder true crime. So yeah. There's been some episodes of your show that I've really enjoyed. Well, let's jump right into questions, shall we?
Yeah, but before we do that, I just want to say the Leaving Eden podcast is a fully independent podcast. We seek to bring you new episodes every week about generally about Sadie's life in the independent fundamental Baptist cult, but you know, because it is Pride Month, we have decided to branch out from that. So the reason why we are doing this episode today is because we are focusing on the LGBTQ community for the month of June. We seek to promote freedom of mind, freedom of thought, and freedom of religion. With all of that being said, I think now is a good time to jump right into the question. So Sadie, do you want to start us off?
Yeah. So I know that some of our listeners may have heard Evan may have heard your story on other social media platforms or heard a little bit of it on your own podcast. But for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with you, would you just kind of summarize your story and how you got to where you are?
Yes. Yes, I will. I will try to be as brief as possible.
No worries. You're the star of this one.
You can go into as much detail as you like.
All right. Well, like I told you all, I am an open book. So if you have questions about things, you're welcome to ask me. But in summary, I was born into the Independent Fundamental Baptist movement. My father was attending Hiles Anderson College, which is one of the camps of the IFB. I know you all have talked a little bit about the different groups that they have. I call them the Godfathers. And so Jack Hiles was the big godfather.
They are a bit like gangsters, aren't they?
Yeah, right. They are. They like to think they are. I don't know if you've ever, this is jumping way ahead, but I don't know if you've ever read the, what was it? The saddest story you've ever told, where they tell the story of Jack Hiles and all of his sins are exposed. And they talk about how people came after the journalist, and they were like mobsters, you know, threatening to hurt him and chase him down. Anyways. So my father was attending the Hiles Anderson College, as was my mother. And then they stayed there for a little bit. They got married, they had some kids, and then they went and they started their own IFB church down in South Carolina. And then my dad passed away of leukemia. And when my dad passed away of leukemia, Jack Hiles came down to my mom because he was still very, very much involved in their lives. And he basically told her she needed to leave all of her friends and family in South Carolina. That's where she had been born and raised, and my dad had been born and raised. Go back up to Indiana and, you know, rejoin his church. So from the age of 8 until I was 23, I grew up in the Hiles realm of the IFB. I attended their schools. I went off and I attended their college. I worked for the college. And in college, my entire...
Oh, no, I think we were at Hiles Anderson, like pretty close to each other.
Where I was there from 2006 to 2011.
Oh, barely missed you. I was there fall of 2011 to spring of 2013.
Oh, yeah, literally that fall, that spring I had been out. I was supposed to be back that fall, but we'll get to that. So okay. I would have caught you. So I was there in college for 4 years. At one time, my entire life was always the IFB, let's be real. But I mean, from the moment I woke up at 5 a.m. until the moment I went to bed at 11 p.m. or 12 o'clock, I was constantly doing stuff for the church or for the college or for a ministry of the IFB. I got paid by them, which I didn't actually get paid. It all went to my tuition and everything, but everything in my life revolved around them. And throughout that entire time, I was struggling with a lot of things, you know, all the feelings that we have to repress in general. And on top of that, I was also struggling with my gender identity and my sexual orientation, which are two things that they don't discuss at all unless they're talking about how horrible and sinful it is.
So they don't talk about it at all.
No, I mean, except for to preach, I did not hear the word transgender until I was 24 years old. I did hear the word gay and lesbian a lot because it was the gays and lesbians that had caused 9/11 and that had caused Hurricane Katrina and that had caused all the bad things that happened in our world. So I did know that. I knew that people could be gay, and I also knew that being gay was the worst thing. I mean, it was always tied in with being a pedophile or being a murderer. Those were the three, you know, unpardonable sins.
Well, Jack Hiles' son is allegedly two of those things.
Yeah. Allegedly.
He is allegedly all three of those things.
Hashtag arrest David Hiles.
Yes, exactly. If we want to get into the Jack Hiles bit, we can. I mean, anyways. So I was continuing through, and then I finally had a breakdown my senior year of college. I was a dorm supervisor. I had a complete breakdown. A big rumor got out that I was demon possessed. They told me to take some time. And during that time, I started, you know, doing things that regular adults that are 21 are doing. I drank a little. I went to the movies. I, you know, met up with a guy and I made out with this guy. Obviously, at this time, I'm living as a woman. And all of this, you know, culminates into me having to go to a counselor. And when I go to the counselor, I tell them that I think that I'm attracted to women. And so they send me to the Reformers Unanimous, which is the RU home is the IFB's form of rehab. And the word rehab connected to the RU home is a joke. There is nothing rehab about it except for the fact that you get locked away somewhere. I was sent off to the First Baptist Church of Hammond's RU home for 6 months. And in the Reformers Unanimous program, they treat everything as a sin. So what I had, according to them, was sexual sins. So my gender identity, which I still was not clear on at all, but my sexual orientation, that was all a sexual sin. And so I had to treat that like an addiction. And I had to go through this program. And what I found in the RU home, it was basically... And at this point, Jack Hiles had died and his son-in-law, Jack Scott, had taken over. And it was basically this place where Jack Scott would send anyone who was a problem. Because I was in this RU home and I was in there with I was in there with women who had serious drug addictions. I was also in there with women who were depressed. I was in there with a girl who was dating a boy that Jack Scott didn't approve of. No real reason why. but he didn't approve of the boy, so he had sent the girl to the home. I was in there with a girl who wouldn't get married. And because she wouldn't agree to get married, he sent her there. So it was this really weird group of people where you had folks that had real issues and they really needed help. And then you had folks that wouldn't obey because they're, you know, 25, 30, 40 year old women. And so he sent them there. So that's where I was for 6 months. And after 6 months, I emerged and I was cured. Hallelujah. So 2 weeks after I emerged from rehab, I got married to a man. And then 4 months after that, I realized that I wasn't cured and I decided I was going to go back to counseling, but, and I'm grateful today, you know, but my husband at the time was like, I can't do this. You know, he just said he couldn't do it and he took off. And then he told everybody that the reason he took off was because I was gay and he couldn't deal with it. So he outed you. Yes, he did. He outed me to everyone. And so then I just, and then, you know, people did approach me and I was offered a chance to go back. And there was never any clear thing of what going back would mean. But I knew from the experiences and the stories that going back meant go to some camp in Montana and whatever the hell they do to you. And then you keep doing that. You keep doing this conversion therapy until you get cured. And I couldn't do it. So I just left. I never like formally exited the IFB. I didn't have any intention or want or desire to leave the IFB at that point. I didn't even know what was on the outside. I just knew I was too tired. I was too exhausted and I couldn't keep this up. You know, this is just like, this wasn't going away. I'd been struggling with my orientation since a child. I was 6 years old the first time I ever got in trouble for kissing a girl. So I was just, and by that time I'm 23 and I'm tired. So I just kind of drifted away. And then as I drifted away, I started, you know, trying to find another church, and I couldn't find another church in Indiana at that time that would accept an LGBTQ person or an out LGBTQ person. So then I started reading books. I read all the standard books of atheism, you know, the God Delusion and God Is Not Great and Daniel Dennett and all of them, Sam Harris, and studying religion in general. And I just ended up letting faith in general go for me. I mean, it just fell away for me. And then, and I struggled. I did fall into a deep depression. I did struggle with addiction, ironically, real substance use disorder for several years. And then I reached out and I got some help. I got some help for my substance use disorder and I started connecting with other survivors. I eventually met my wife. And today my life is 1,000 times better. This June is going to mark 10 years since I left or was detached or shunned from the IFB. And I'm doing a lot better today. I really am.
That is excellent to hear, but that is quite a roller coaster that you have been on, isn't it?
It is.
So I have a quick question about something that you said. When you said that you were sent to the RU home, like who is doing the sending?
Well, I don't know. For everybody, it was different. Most of the people that I met, they had met with Jack Skop, and Jack Skop had said, "You need to do this," and he would do that. He mean, I actually dated a girl for a little while. He got her parents to trick her into going to the RU home down in Rockville, in Illinois, and she thought she was going on a tour, and then they left her there. So he would do stuff like that. But in my case, it was a little easier because my parents were so in the circle. So I met with his daughter. She got me in touch with George Rampt, who was the director at the time. I don't know if he still is. And he was the one who was like, "You need to get in the home. We can help you." And again, I was just, I want it to be fixed. I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I need to do this because these feelings aren't going away and I need help.
Yeah. And I didn't mean to come off like I was having a problem with your wording. I knew fine. Jack Skop. Like, I knew him personally, so I understand the forcefulness of his personality.
Yeah, yes. Well, one of the things that that kind of a little dot that kind of connected for me. So you were saying that. So in the start of your story, you know, your mother, when your father died. So Jack Hyles goes to South Carolina and tells your mother, who is now a widow, to leave everybody that she knows. And to go up to Indiana to come back to, like, so basically let's isolate this person so that we can get this person back in, like just deep and deep and deep into this organization. And that kind of connected with me, you know, like say Jack Scop is saying, I don't like this person that you're dating. Let me send you to this home to try and disconnect you from them as best I possibly can. It's a way to, and that's one of the things that cults always do, is if they're going to try to separate people from other people who might have their best interest in mind, it's a tactic of abuse. And that's just something that really jumped out to me at the beginning of your story.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And her, you know, her family saw it, and my dad's family saw it too. And they were they had already been voicing their concerns, but you know how you are in that, you know, my parents, when my dad was alive, had shut them down and said, if you're going to criticize Jack Hyles, then we're not going to have a relationship. So my grandparents had all backed off. And then when Jack Hyles encouraged my mom to leave after my dad died, I mean, she had three kids under the, you know, seven and under. And when he encouraged her to leave, they once again voiced their opinions and said, this isn't good. This isn't healthy. This doesn't seem right. And she again said, if you're not going to support Jack Hyles, then you're not supporting God. And we can't have a relationship. And so, again, they stepped back and, you know, because they wanted a relationship with their grandkids. But absolutely, it's using that power and isolating and pulling the person away when they're vulnerable and taking advantage of that.
Wow. That's, I mean, that is an incredible piece of that is a piece of abuse that or a tactic of abuse that cult leaders will often use, is they will see somebody who is vulnerable and then they will try to get them isolated.
I wanted to talk about, it sounds like your gender identity, sexual identity was a, maybe not the only factor for you eventually leaving a cult, but it seems like it was a major factor. Am I getting that kind of right?
Well, I mean, it was the catalyst because I didn't have anything else. Yeah, I consider it a major factor because I always wonder if I was so heavily bought in. I mean, I was 110% committed.
You're totally sold out.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I had dedicated my life to God. I'd had a spiritual revelation at the age of 16. At least I believed I did, you know, and I was committed. And so I always wonder if I wasn't queer, where would I be? Would I still be there? I mean, I probably would be. I'd probably be speaking at some IFB, you know, teen girls youth conference today. Yeah, something like that.
Gosh. Because I would, oh, I would never want to. Thank God that neither one of us ever. Thank God neither one of us ever has to go back to one of those stupid meetings again.
Yeah, but also, I mean, if you weren't queer, then you wouldn't be you. You'd be a completely different person, right, dude?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just see that's one thing I'm consistently thankful for, and you might be the one person who is more thankful for it than I am.
Okay, so give us the deets. Are these meetings, are they just like you know, please your man, like praise God, praise Jesus,
it's like there's definitely, I wonder, I say to you, like there's conditioning, right? Like all that, like you're seeing and you're up and down. They do this thing, they get you up and down, especially in the Christian womanhood, right? You're up and you're down, you're waving your hands and you're singing, things that wouldn't be allowed in traditional church.
Well,
setting.
You're allowed to do it because there are no men around to be tempted by your seductive hand waving.
Man, that hand wave. You know what? I did watch the Single Ladies Beyonce video, so I do know what they're on about.
There you go. Yeah, so they are like, something.
It's like toxic positivity conditioning and then like please your husband. So it's like it's like half and half in my experience.
Did you ever have the I don't know if you guys name drops here so you can edit this out. Did you ever have the sex talk, the 72-hour sex talk?
You
your
know
man
what?
Should never what go ahead.
Oh yeah.
Wait, there's
I had
a
her
70
for...
seven wait, hold up, a 72-hour sex talk.
You
like
should
you have
never,
to do it
no.
every 3 days.
Yeah, you should never, your man should never go more than 72 hours without sex. Never.
Yeah, I had her for freshman prep for leadership, Hyles Anderson Jericho program, fall 2011. Never forgot it.
This is so wait, they actually taught you this in
that was in class, and it was also in that was a talk I heard her give in Christian womanhood, and it was also a class where she would teach you how to be a good Christian wife. She also taught you not to masturbate. There was a whole big thing about how you cannot masturbate.
See, I didn't
sin it
catch
was.
That because I don't think I knew what that was as an 18-year-old Hyles Anderson freshman.
So what did they call it?
Oh, she said masturbate. She's I mean when
but Sadie
I was
doesn't
there,
know what that means.
I don't remember. So either she didn't do that in my freshman year class, or Possibly. I just wasn't aware of the meaning of the word. Because this is the same. This is 2 years after I saw the Paula Schaft sermon and knew that something was up, but couldn't figure out what.
So in an episode that has not aired at the time of recording this, but has aired at the time of this episode's release, it will have been the episode right before this, or two episodes right before this, we reveal that Sadie did not, in fact, know what a foreskin was for, like, because they always talked about circumcision and the foreskin in the Bible, but she didn't know what it was.
Well, nobody would tell me.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't talk about, never got any kind of body part message or anything, nothing like that. My mother, the week of my wedding, was like, so I want to have a talk with you. As mom, it is way too late for that.
So it was literally like Daphne Bridgerton's mother. Like, exactly. Right,
exactly. I think I said something about that to my wife when we were watching Bridgerton. Sorry.
Oh my God, dude. I watched, I'm going to get off on this Bridgerton tangent because I watched Bridgerton and like everything they say about sex was like reminding me of the IFB. That was it. Like, I was like, oh yeah, like that's like, oh, that's like, okay, yeah, the big ball, that's like Christmas lights. Okay, sure. Huh. Yeah, they got caught kissing in the garden. So scandalous. Definitely got to get married now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So obviously being, I guess you don't know that you're transgender while you're in the IFB.
Right.
So how does that, I guess, I don't want to say, so you didn't hear them talk about transgender people at all, or that wasn't a thing. No. I'm sure that that is now a thing that they talk about because that's a thing that's in the forefront of culture.
But, I know it is because my stepfather is a big proponent against the transgender cult, as he calls it. Oh, so, God. Yes, they do talk about it a lot.
Yeah. So how, so you didn't even know that that existed. You didn't even know that that was a thing.
No, I didn't. I mean, I think like there was something like they, of course, in there they conflated sexuality and gender. So they might say something about, you know, men dressing in women's clothing and things like that. But they never said the word transgender or that there was there were people that, you know, that their gender identity did not match their sex assigned at birth. And so I had no idea that was a thing that people did. And then I was almost a year out and I was dating an individual who told me that they were, dating is a strong word. I was casually seeing an individual who told me that they were transgender. And I was like, what is that? And they explained it to me and I was very transphobic. I was like, why do you need to do that? I was really angry. But in my mind, I thought that's it. Like that's the word you're looking for. That's what it is. But I was not ready to face that or anything. And it was a long time before I would face my gender identity.
Wow. So it did sort of click right away, but it took a little bit for you to accept it.
My coming out, my first coming out was so horrendous that I knew I couldn't do that. You know, like the thought of having to come out and say, I'm not a lesbian, I'm transgender, and I'm also, you know, pansexual, or, you know, those were all words that I still wasn't clear on. But I knew that having to come out in a second time and having to come out and say, you know, I'm actually a man, I couldn't do that. And that time period, you know, again, I was off the deep end at that time. I was in a very dark depression. I had no one in my life and I couldn't handle another coming out. So I just filed it away and I believed I never would come out.
Well, the first time that, you know, that I guess you didn't really come out, you were outed. So there was going to be so much trauma assigned to that anyway. So that's totally understandable.
Right. And it's also like, it's so not normalized that people's identities can like shift and adjust over time.
Right.
Somebody, like I have a lot of friends who, you know, oh, well, they feel like they need to like draw a very distinct line between pansexual and bisexual. Mm-hmm. But they feel like they have, like, people feel like we have to get it right the first time. And then like, there's no fixing it if you came out as the wrong thing. And I would really hope that that kind of continues to change and continues to get better. Like where we understand that people's identities shift throughout their lives.
Well, when I'm talking, especially to younger people, because in my work now, I work, you know, as an LGBTQ advocate in my day job. And when I'm talking to young people, especially, I always try to put the emphasis on, like, you know, as our language evolves, our identities and understandings and the labels we attach to those identities might evolve as well. As we grow and understand our bodies, those things might evolve. And that's okay. Fluid is a term I use all the time because your sexuality, your gender, your expression, those things can be fluid. And there may be times in your life where it's really rigid, and some people may be more rigid in their identities than others, but it is completely natural for you to grow in your own understanding of your body and to change those labels as you continue growing.
Yeah, because labels are for you, right? Like, they're for the person. They're not for the outside world.
Yeah, they're for you, and they're for you to identify yourself and you to share with other people who you are, right?
Right, right.
Is that accurate? Yeah. So I like the way that you're talking about expressing identity, and I want to, that brings me to something that I wanted to ask. So both of us wanted to talk about, because so I have looked at your Instagram. You're a fairly fashionable kind of guy. So
that's a really good compliment coming from Gavi, in case you didn't know.
Thank
so,
you.
You know, cause Sadie has talked about, Sadie, you know, she came out of the IFB and then, you know, you figure out how to dress yourself. So did you have to figure out how to dress yourself coming out of the IFB and then how to figure out how to dress yourself again, being like, okay, I'm a man. What is my, you know, aesthetic now that like I've figured out this part as well?
Yeah, it was all very big. So I've heard a lot of women and or female identifying people who have come out of the IFB, and you know, like everyone else, I had the big moment of wearing pants in public for the first time and understanding how that looked on my body. Like a lot of people, I think I was maybe 2 or 3 years before I could finally wear shorts and not feel uncomfortable. And I was always horribly dressed when I had to present as a woman, because nothing ever felt right. Nothing looked right. I couldn't figure it out to save my life. In fact, the one thing about the IFB was that they were so rigid in those rules that it was kind of safe for me because I knew exactly what it was I could wear, and that was easy. Having a whole world of fashion available to me, I couldn't figure it out, and I didn't really have a desire at that time. I also had my own homophobia, and I had, you know, people, you know, would say, well, if you're a lesbian, you're not going to be one of those lesbians, are you? Referring to butch lesbians. And I was, oh, no. And so I tried all these looks that just didn't look for me. And then I kind of gravitated towards a little more masculine. And then I met my wife, and my wife told me that she really liked a masculine look. And so I was like, oh, okay, I can do that. Because I met my wife before I transitioned. And then as I started to experiment with the masculine look, that clicked for me. And I enjoyed that. I mean, I am probably the only guy that loves a tie. I love a tie and a pocket square.
If you're not the only guy that loves a tie and a pocket square, my guy. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
we have that in common.
Yes. So, I mean, yeah. So then I, like, all of a sudden there was this world of fashion that was open to me that I enjoyed and I liked. And so then that really took off. I definitely found my identity in a masculine world, as far as fashion was concerned, a lot quicker than I had all those years before, which makes sense. But yes, it was quite a journey. I would say only in like the last couple years have I felt pretty confident in my fashion choices.
Well, on Instagram, at least your fashion choices look pretty good, pretty excellent.
Thank you.
I would say fashionable kind of guy. So that's really cool to hear. And you know, that's one of the things that I always talk about. You know, if you feel like you're comfortable in the clothes that you wear and you feel like you're rocking a look, you're rocking an aesthetic, that's just going to make everything else in your life just go, you know, yes. At least if you're expressing, because you know, that's how people perceive us is through how we look. That's the first thing that somebody understands about you. And the first thing that somebody understands about who you are is how you look. And so that's something that I think is, you know, is really cool. I think it's really cool how you found that and how you really figured that out for yourself in a way that's excellent.
So I have another question. Something that I've heard you talk about on social media through Vashti Initiative is the fact that people who come out of a cult, sometimes they don't understand cultural references. They don't have like hobbies or interests, because like you said, and like I've said a lot of times, you put so much work into the IFB. Like you, when you're in that kind of, especially at Hiles Anderson, you work and you go to class and you go to ministry and you work and you're just exhausted all the time. And so can you talk a little bit about finding your interests and finding hobbies and like learning about cultural references and what that was like?
Yeah. I mean, I had to start real basic. The one thing that I had was a library, you know, so I was grateful for that. And what I did is I went to the library and I just started with the basics. You know, I got some books on science. I got some books on history. I got some books on pop culture, and I like to read. So like this wouldn't work for everybody, but you could do the same thing with podcast or with or audiobooks or documentaries, you know, whatever it is. And I also went to the videos. That was back when people really were borrowing videos from the library, and I got documentaries on the same things, and I just sat there and I watched them. And so that kind of gave me a foundation for the basic education, because in the beginning, what was really even the pop culture was very unsettling, but what's really unsettling is that I was, you know, I still thought the world was 6,000 years old. So I'm navigating with people. I didn't think dinosaurs actually existed. I thought they were
planet Earth. You're like, what the f-?
Right? I'm like, what are people talking about? Like, I mean, my best friend Paul, who does the podcast with me today, I met him back in the early days, and he was like, I said something about, well, dinosaurs are fake, and he looked at me like I had two heads. He's like, what are you talking about?
Okay, you want to hear an embarrassing story about me relating to dinosaurs and
things that things are fake and real? Oh, this is great. Gabby's telling embarrassing stories.
Okay, so I first saw Jurassic Park, and the special effects in that movie are admittedly very good, but somebody told me that to make that movie, they actually had to clone the dinosaurs. And so when somebody was like... So this is legitimately true. So Sadie told me a story about how she was how she got into an argument with a guy at OMSI about how dinosaurs are fake or the fossils are fake or something. I at one point got into an argument with somebody who said that dinosaurs were fake by telling them, well, if dinosaurs are fake, then how did they make Jurassic Park?
Oh, yeah, God, if only though.
Yeah, I did. So now that he spilled it, I did once go to a science museum and argue with a real scientist who has a doctor's degree in paleontology about why dinosaurs were not real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was even after I was leaving, I was still getting in arguments with people about that.
That was 2 years after I left. That was in 2015. Yeah.
So Evan, did you have ACE education?
No, I didn't. We had created our own curriculum at Hammond Baptist High School and grade school and all of those schools.
Was that good or?
No, I mean, I think
it's
probably
better
just
than ACE, but that's about it from what I've heard.
I mean, it might only be better because. Yeah, it might only be better because you had classes, like actual teachers, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was the biggest thing that like when you found out, because I guess you're going really into documentaries, you're going really into science, you're going really into like pop culture. What was one thing that you found that you really glommed onto when you found it and you're just like, oh, this is my thing. This is really for me.
Honestly, history was, but I already had loved history, and now I had the pleasure of relearning history. So that was big for me. I don't think the rest of it, like TV shows and music, didn't come way later for me, honestly. Not to say that I didn't listen to any music or watch any TV, because I did, but I don't think that I had my interests developed. It was a lot later when I really had a community of friends that I started to develop that part of my identity. That's why community and things like that are so important for people who are healing.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I don't think there was, I mean, and then I did really get down a deep hole of the militant atheist for a while, and which my
that's
issue
understandable was, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And my issue isn't with their atheism. My issue was that, you know, they wanted to rid the world of religion, which I don't agree with. I just, you know, I don't believe in a God, and I do think that religion can be used and can be harmful against people, but I also think that there are people that find comfort and healing in religion as well. I think, you know, it's like any institution, it can be corrupted, and it's how we address that and whether we're going to address that as a nation, as a society. And if we don't hold religions accountable, then yeah, we're going to have some serious issues, and we do right now.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. And, you know, one of the things that I always say about this, when people are always talking about, oh, religion is evil. Well, if you look at some of like the greatest mass murderers of the last 100 years, you know, we have Hitler, Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, those four guys, all of them, not only were they atheists, but they were anti-religion. So, yeah, you can't be like, OK, well, this is good or this is bad. You know, that's kind of my take on that.
Yeah, I'm very much pro people finding what works for them, because I think like I've gone religiously like the weirdest direction that anybody who's ever been raised IFB has gone.
That's true, because for you guys, for the Catholics are like the yeah, great Satan.
Because like I'm in the process of joining the Catholic Church, and that's like one, I came out as bisexual, LGBT like advocate and supporter and ally and everything else, and then I'm joining the Catholic Church, which has like some serious work to do in that area and like some things that they are very wrong about. So then I have to come out and be like, oh yeah, the Catholic Church is wrong, but it's the way I want to worship, but also I don't believe that you should have to have it too, and it just gets very complicated.
Yeah, but they need somebody like you. That's the thing, they need somebody like you to really be saying these things, and they need people who are members who are saying these things.
Yeah. But Evan, you help, so your day job, you're an LGBT advocate.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that entails?
Yeah, well, to be specific, I'm an LGBTQ advocate for victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. So
good on you, man.
I work at a really great organization. I'm not going to say their name here because I don't represent them in this moment, but I work for a good organization, and we do all kinds of things, from just like, you know, one-on-one advocacy with people. We provide a lot of shelter, we provide a lot of housing, we like a lot of different kind of housing options for people that don't have income, and with LGBTQ populations in particular, and those who have suffered these other violences on top of it, they don't have places where they can go. I mean, most shelters won't even allow trans people to be in their shelters, or to be in the shelter that has their correct gender identity. And if they do allow it, there's really horrendous harassment. So we run the only LGBTQ shelter in our state. And, you know, we're able to do a lot of work in helping people. And it's a very rewarding job. It's a hard job, but it's a very rewarding job.
Wow. I mean, that's an important thing, because, you know, vulnerable populations, man. Mm-hmm. Like the more vulnerable somebody is, the more likely that they are to be victims of abuse again and again and again and again. And it's a really vicious cycle.
But in addition to that, you have your own organization, the Vashti Initiative.
Yes.
Which is a new thing.
Yeah. Tell us about that. Because that's really interesting to us.
We've been recommending that somebody, I did ask Reddit or Funny Snark AMA on Reddit recently, and people were asking me like, what charities do you support to help people? And honestly, yours is the only one that I know and trust, so I was recommending you everywhere.
Well, thank you.
But can you tell us about what you do, and tell us about what you do to help people who are getting out of the IFB?
Yeah, so I mean, like a lot of survivors, if you've been on online support groups or forums, you hear survivors constantly talking about, why isn't anyone helping victims of spiritual and religious abuse? Or sometimes we use the term adverse religious environment. There are some groups out there, some more now, that are supporting people who have come from cults, but a lot of people are hesitant to use that word cult. And honestly, a lot of people may come from an abusive spiritual environment that would not technically classify as a cult. And so there's a lot of, I don't have personal issues with that word, but we don't use that word only because we don't want to deter people from reaching out to us because they don't think they qualify. And so basically there was a group of survivors that got together a year ago, and we were talking about how we need a kind of social service agency for victims of spiritual and religious abuse, the same way that we have for victims of domestic violence and for victims of sexual assault. And there's a lot of overlap in that. I've done two online surveys with just the IFB, and in one of them, I mean, there was over 50% of the survey respondents said that they had suffered some form of domestic violence, either witnessed it as a child or endured it as an adult. And so you've seen a lot. And then the statistics for sexual assault were even higher. And so we see a lot of these things, and we see a lot of the same problems that people who have left these violent situations. Similar things happen to victims of spiritual abuse and religious abuse. And it all depends on how controlling and overseeing that person's group was. But they leave these groups and they are lost in the outside world. They've been taught not to trust their government. They've been taught not to trust outsiders. Often they don't know how to navigate their resources, or if they do know how to navigate their resources, they only know how to navigate them through the lens of their former church. So they don't really know how to access, say, filling out a FAFSA or applying for college, because they've only ever applied for college that was, you know, like Hiles Anderson College or
not
West
a real
Coast
college.
Like, right, exactly. That didn't actually have real standards that you had to pass to get accepted to that college. And the same thing, like even things, I've seen people who would sign over their entire food check to the church. And so they don't even know how to use the resources that they did have. There's so many layers of abuse. And so we decided we would start an agency that starts to meet those needs. So as of right now, we're still pretty small. We do have some volunteers in several different states, 15 states actually. And we have a hotline that runs from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 days a week. We want to get that to 24/7. We're not there yet. We're very close to adding a text line as well, because a lot of people can't step away to make a phone call, but they can send a text. So we're very close to that. We run a virtual support group on Sunday nights, and we're hoping to expand to more support groups. We have our online community. And then we also have our resource navigators, which means if a person were to call our hotline or send us an email or contact us through our website at vashtiinitiative.org, then a resource navigator could contact them and help them see what's around them. Like, you know, just this morning I was sending a list to an individual who was seeking therapists that are specifically trained on cults. And so I got that information. Yesterday, someone reached out and said, I need to find an LGBTQ affirming church that is not, you know, I'm in an IFB heavily populated area and I need an LGBTQ affirming church. And so I looked around, verified some resources for them and got that to them. And so those are some of the things that we're doing right now. And then we also want to continue adding career development. A lot of people, they don't know how to build a resume. They've only ever worked in their church or in their religious environment. Again, navigating education. And then we also have our Victims Fund, which we're currently raising money for. And the Victims Fund would put tangible support in people's hands. So maybe getting them a cell phone or a bus fare to get out of there, or paying for a hotel for a night, sending groceries to someone who's left their church and they don't have an income anymore, or they're in a new area. So a lot of things in the works, some things happening. And that's a very general overview. Hope I didn't take too much time. But yeah, that's what we're doing right now.
No, I just enjoyed hearing that. That just made me smile.
No, that's all stuff that is deeply important for everybody who's and these are all of the things that, you know, if you are leaving a group like the IFB, who, you know, that part of what we talk about all the time, that Sadie talks about all the time, is that they have to convince you that it's not worth it to leave, or they have to convince you to, you know, to be complicit in your own brainwashing. So these are all resources that are, you know, like individual pieces of tangible actions that, you know, people can take that will actually like help somebody who just feels completely lost, like they have nothing to do or they don't know what to do. And that's the Vashti Initiative.
Yes, the Vashti Initiative.
Do you have a website?
Yes, vashtiinitiative.org.
And Vashti is okay, so that is, so there was a king, mm-hmm. whoever was the king in Esther's time, right? Vashti was
king
his
Ahasuerus.
Wife. Ahasuerus. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I know Vashti's the girl who said, I know she's the queen who said no to the king.
Yes. Yeah. So Vashti, we chose her for a couple of reasons. First of all, she's in several texts. She's not just in the Bible. She's also mentioned, obviously, in the Jewish texts. She is mentioned in the Quran as well. And so Queen Vashti, or Vashti as it's sometimes pronounced, but Queen Vashti was the queen of King Ahasuerus. He's got all his guys together one night and they get drunk and he orders his queen to come in and dance before him. And a lot of people believe that that meant to dance before him naked and all of his men, which was a very degrading thing for any wife or woman, but especially, I mean, she's the queen. And so she refused him. And when she refused him, the men said, you know, you need to get rid of her. She's no good. How dare she? And there was a, when she refused him, she didn't just refuse her husband. She refused her king and she refused her spiritual authority because he was her husband and he was her king. And so in biblical standards and in Jewish standards, that was her spiritual authority. And so she's kicked out. She's banished from the kingdom. She's never heard from again. He goes out and he finds Esther and replaces her. But we felt that her defiance and her willingness to stand up to her spiritual authority, to her leader, really represented what a lot of survivors of religious and spiritual abuse do when they leave these toxic spiritual environments.
Wow. That is a powerful analogy right there.
It really is. I remember hearing her spoken about in church growing up. And what I mainly remember is that in the VeggieTales version, he tells her to make a sandwich. And she says no.
So wait, here's a question. Yeah. So in VeggieTales, if they're making a sandwich, what are they putting in the sandwich? Are there going to be veggies in the sandwich?
Mm. I guess not. That's would
a good
be
question.
Yeah. So wait, here's cannibalism. No, wait. So are, if VeggieTales, are they? Do they eat meat? If he's
so yes, like they do, because meat. Mr. Lunt eats a cheeseburger. So yes, they do.
So they're eating meat, and meat is like for them being like vegetarians, like how in Twilight the vampires that are like they're vegetarian if they only drink animal blood.
It's a good point. I guess it would be, but I feel like on that hamburger there's probably some pickles, and that's a lot.
We ask the big questions on Leaving Eden podcast.
Hard-hitting podcast.
Evan, were you allowed to watch VeggieTales growing up?
I was allowed to watch some of them. Some of them my parents thought were too much. But some of them, yeah.
So we were allowed to watch VeggieTales, but we had to. Sorry, this cracks me up.
Did you have to turn it down?
No, we had to skip the Bible verses because they weren't King James.
Oh my God. No, I don't remember that. But there were some songs that my parents thought were too rocky or something. And so they had to skip forward. And then especially as I guess they got a little like the newer versions, we didn't watch many of those because they were getting too worldly.
So here's a question. So you're like, oh man, so these songs are too rocky. Like I gotta see what are they keeping from me? And then you turn it on and you're like, man, this is the best song I ever heard.
Oh, I mean that was me with Disney songs until my mid-20s, you know. Disney in.
Disney songs fucking slap sometimes.
They do.
What kind of music do you like in general? What kind of music are you into?
Oh, I'm into like grunge rock now.
Okay. Like some Pearl Jam.
Oh, dude, yeah. I'm like the biggest like heavy metal fan.
Sadie went hardcore metalhead.
I push my child out to black metal, so you're not going to offend me with any kind of music choice.
I don't want to diss my own form of music, but I also feel like growing up without having real musical taste, it's awful. My wife can't stand it. She's a beautiful, like she sings and she's a musician and she's really talented and she can't stand what I listen to, but I don't have any kind of a musical ear, so whatever to me.
Yeah, but like I gotta say, first of all, Sadie, pushing out a baby is metal as f***.
That's absolutely true. Yes,
absolutely true. It's like some brutal shit. Like, but like I feel like being really into grunge is very much like I don't want to say militant atheist, but like it is very much like part of there's that aesthetic where it's just like it's the 90s and I'm an enlightened dude.
Yes.
If Evan had grown up,
Paul Rudd in Clueless.
Yes,
that is what it is. But if you had grown up like in the normal world in the same time, that you could have conceivably been into that.
Like 1990?
88.
Okay, yeah. So what would you have been listening to in high school? Maybe you would have been listening to like, so what, you would graduate in like 2006, 2007. Yeah. We've been listening to, like,
my husband is
Park.
1 year. Yeah, my husband is 1 year Park, older.
Yes. Yeah, like,
yeah, crawling. And he says Slipknot Nickelback and Linkin Park were big.
Yeah, get that. What's that one song? Disturbed, Down with the Sickness. That would have been you.
Yeah,
my guy. Yeah, we would have seen you in Jankos in middle school.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely that, or I would have just gone hard, like goth or like emo, more, you know, not full goth. I probably would have gone more that.
See, Gabi, I have told you that every IFB kid like secretly wants to be like a scene kid.
Oh, Hundo P.
Because I have talked about on the podcast before how like all I wanted growing up was like dyed purple hair and like those cute gloves that girls used to wear, you know,
yeah,
like the fingerless gloves.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was all I wanted in the entire world.
What was your thing? Like, what was your dyed pink hair of the IFB?
Like what I wanted?
Like yeah, the one thing you wanted. You weren't allowed, but was denied to you cruelly.
Oh God, I don't know, because I was so in it. I saw some things, but I don't know if that there was something. I think I just want to know what it's like to wear a pair of pants. I don't even know if I got that far into what kind of those pants would be like or what they would look like. I just wanted to try them.
You know, if they're Jenko jeans, then it's not that different from wearing a dress anyway.
It's true. I probably would have been a good starter.
Yeah.
So is there anything that you haven't gotten to yet? Like, my thing is evolution. Like, I certainly believe that it's very, very, very likely that the world evolved and was not created by God. Like, I intellectually, I do understand this, but I just, like, I need so much more information about evolution before I can, like, say, like, yep, I believe that. Because, like, I never learned it, and I feel like I shouldn't just say I believe something without knowing what it's about. So what's your thing? Like, what's, like, one thing you haven't done yet or one thing that you still really want to do, like, post getting out of the IFB?
You mean, like, discover or understand or?
Like, experience, understand, just, like, I don't know, skydiving. Like, what, like, if there's anything that, like, you haven't gotten to yet, but you've always meant to do it and you're going to get to it eventually.
I would, and not to be very like unoriginal, but I really would like to see the world, like, you know, at Europe and travel, because my travel has really only consisted of Canada and the United States. So I want to know what the rest of the world is like, because everything in the IFB is so nationalist and it's so American imperialism, really. It's just this idea that America is flawless and perfect. And I know that's not true, but I also know that I only have really my American perspective. So even connecting with people in other countries, to go over and see what those other countries are like and to really hear what people think of America and who we are, and even our Western form of Christianity, would be very interesting to me. I do think that on a lot of points, I've slowly found my way. I have learned that I don't make snap judgments anymore. So whenever I hear something new and I automatically recoil and say, that can't be true, I've learned to stop and relax and then ask, why can't that be true? How can I find the answers? And that's been a really big part of my healing, because there were things that were so offensive to me when I left, even as I was no longer welcomed back in the IFB. There were things, you know, like abortion or certain topics that were so offensive to me if they were even mentioned. And I had to learn to let go and really ask my questions. And so I feel like on a lot of topics, I know where I stand today, but I also am not afraid to change my opinion tomorrow. So that's where I'm at right now.
That was like a perfect answer. That was a great answer, and I think that's probably a good thing to go ahead and wrap up our interview on, just because that was, like, so good.
I have one more question to
okay,
ask.
Okay, go ahead.
So, Evan, you said that when you were, like, sort of on the way out, you would go to movies. So, Sadie told me what the first movie she ever went see in theaters was, and we'll tell everybody later. So, what was the first movie that you went to see in the movie theater when you got out of the IFB? Or when you were on the way out of the IFB?
I saw a few movies in the IFB. I got in big trouble for them. So I don't know the first movie that I saw when I was out, but I can tell you the first movie I ever went to. I was 16 years old.
What did you get that you got in trouble for?
Oh, yeah. I got in trouble. The legend goes that I split my parents or my grandparents' church, but that's a little bit of a exaggeration.
Wow.
Because I had snuck out with the I was visiting my grandma in South Carolina, and I had snuck out with her pastor's son and gone to the movies. And he was quite a bit older than me. The guy honestly had no business taking me out on a date, but I wanted to go to the movies. And so he took me to see Bourne Ultimatum. I don't remember much of the movie, but I was just like, it was like this experience that was just, I don't know. It was magical and terrifying at the same time. I didn't know what was happening. And then later,
Bourne Ultimatum. Bourne Ultimatum. Who hasn't gone to the movies? But okay, what are we going to see? We're going to go see Bourne Ultimatum.
That's where he was taking me. So
not
I
a bad
went.
Movie, but.
And then afterwards, we sat in Sonic, and he played Celine Dion for me, which I am so grateful to him for that, because I have no shame in saying I love Celine Dion. My wife loves Celine Dion. We are big Celine fans, and so that was
my heart will go on.
Of course, my heart will go on.
We had an episode. I made Sadie review Titanic. I made Sadie watch Titanic, and I'm telling you, man, My Heart Will Go On is a top tier jam.
Oh, it's amazing. In my deep depression, I would just blare that while I drank and cry.
Oh,
you know?
No.
Yeah. So.
Well, I'm so glad your heart
every
has gone
night
on.
Every night in my dreams,
beautiful.
I see you.
This happens every episode. He starts singing. You just have to wait till he's done.
It's all right.
Oh man, I hope I don't trigger you.
Oh good lord, no. What was I literally? Oh, Gabi, did you want to tell him what my first movie was, just so that he can laugh?
Please do.
Yeah, it was Get Hard with Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart.
Oh my!
And there's full frontal nudity in that movie.
That's
And wow. So I went to see that movie on my 22nd birthday. I was barely out of the IFB. My Chuck is trying to talk about it because she thinks she was there apparently. Yeah. I was literally barely out of the IFB. 22nd birthday, had never seen a penis in real life, and then there was one on the movie screen.
Wow. Like, that's an experience.
1,000,000,000 feet tall. Yeah, that was a ride.
Like a vault.
That was
You know what? That's jumping right into the deep end, so you get used to it. I mean, you can only go up from there in your movie experience.
I mean,
so.
You've seen that's Jack true. Scott pretend that Arrow was his penis.
That's true. So.
Yeah. Evan, were you at the Polish Shaft?
I was at the Polish Shaft.
I was sitting kind of behind, I'll tell you where I was, in the new auditorium. I was sitting kind of not behind the PA booth, but if you go one section further over from the PA booth towards the center of the room in the balcony, the back section of the balcony, the front row of the back section of the balcony.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. See, well, I had heard that sermon a couple times. That was a popular one for him. So when we used to have youth conference in the old auditorium, I don't know if you ever went in there, the smaller one that became what they call the Spanish.
My first year was the year that they opened the new auditorium. I turned 12 the year that they opened the new auditorium.
Yeah. So he had preached that sermon and he had done that bit a while, but that was definitely one of his most graphic times. And it also, because, you know, he was filming everything at that point, it just, you know, it took off. And then of course he had his charges shortly afterwards. So, but yeah, I had grown up hearing that sermon. I think I might have been like in seventh or eighth grade the first time I ever saw him preach that sermon.
But when you saw it that time, it was different.
I mean, yeah, it was, but he was still polishing the shaft. He always polished the shaft. That was it was the name of the sermon. So,
yeah, you know, it says it in the title. Well, he's not writing checks that he can't cash.
I wanted to end on an inspirational note, but I'm doing a podcast with two boys, and this is where we've ended up.
Yeah. Polish chef, you know?
Polish chef. We're going to make jokes is all we do. Man, Evan, I want to wholeheartedly thank you for agreeing to come on our show as a guest. This has been an awesome interview. We really appreciate all of the stuff that you're doing, not just as a part of the Vashti Initiative, but also in support of the LGBTQ community. That's an excellent endeavor and an excellent work that you are doing. We think that that's great. And it's been awesome to just have you on as our guest. You've been great.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I've had a lot of fun with you too tonight, and I am looking forward to listening to this and sharing it and everything else that you guys are putting out. I did listen to some of your episodes as well before I came on, and you're also doing really great work. So I appreciate it and thank you.
Yeah. One more time. Do you want to plug the Vashti Initiative? Tell us where we can go to find out more information.
We will also put it on our Instagram, but go ahead and do that.
Put it on our Instagram. Put a link in the show notes. We'll blast it everywhere.
Yes. If you go to Vashti, V-A-S-H-T-I, initiative.org, you can contact us there. You can find out about our events, support groups, and every other service that we offer. Also, if you call 1-833-4, the number 4, Vashti, V-A-S-H-T-I, 1-833-4 Vashti. You can talk to a representative between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 days a week. We will be there to answer, give you support, maybe give you some resources, and maybe put you in touch with someone else who can help you as well.
And also, if you are a person who likes donating money to charitable organizations, you can send them money.
Yes,
is a thing that you can do.
Yes, you can. There is a donate page. We receive donations through PayPal as well, so you can go there and we could any help you can send.
Is it tax deductible?
Yes, it is. We got our 501c3 award letter this week, so we are all tax write-offs now, and so we can do corporate matching, all kinds of stuff. So send us a donation.
Excellent, excellent, excellent stuff.
If y'all ever need to hire a full-time accountant, I'm going to have my degree in about two and a half, 3 years.
Well, you know what? I think that's probably about the time we're going to be able to hire people. So there we go.
I was
going to
say, like, if y'all get really big, I'm just saying, I want to work for a nonprofit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the goal is to get some serious funding over the next few years. I mean, the biggest barrier right now is just that a lot of people aren't aware of spiritual and religious abuse. So a lot of foundations don't have funding for these groups. But as we work to create awareness, we're hoping to get some funders. And then we absolutely want to have paid staff in the next 2 to 5 years. That's the goal right now. So we're working towards that, and we absolutely will bring you on as an accountant. We're going to need it.
So it's going to be 1-8. It's 1-833 for Vashti and VashtiInitiative.org. Evan, do you want to plug your social media and plug your podcast?
You can follow the Vashti Initiative at Vashti Initiative. Make sure you add the initiative. If you follow at Vashti, I think you follow a real estate company. So at Vashti Initiative, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram mainly. We are on Twitter, not very active as of right now. Also looking for people to manage our social media. So if you're wanting to volunteer, you can reach out. And then if you wanted to follow the Your Queer Story podcast, we are on all platforms at Your Queer Story. And yeah, check us out. We've also got yourqueerstory.com, and you can go there. We've got downloadable scripts and blog and a bunch of other queer related items there.
Highly recommend it. So listeners, this is going to be the end of the interview portion of this episode, but don't go anywhere because we are going to take a short break and then we are going to come right back. And when we come back, we are going to read another story from a listener. So you want to be here for that. It's really powerful. It's really moving. And we hope you guys enjoy it. Hey, Gavriel here. If you enjoy the Leaving Eden podcast, head over to our Facebook group, Eden Exodus, where you can talk to other fans, ask us questions, and share memes. That's facebook.com/EdenExodus. You can join our Patreon at patreon.com/LeavingEdenPodcast, and you'll get access to extended and uncensored episodes. You can also support our show by recommending it to your family and your friends. The Leaving Eden Podcast is a fully independent podcast, and we really appreciate your support. And now, back to the show. So we are back. We have one more story from a listener before we wrap up this episode. And Sadie, why did we pick this story for today?
So Emery is somebody who's really active in our Eden Exodus Facebook group, and I've really enjoyed interacting with him on there.
Yes.
I thought that it would be neat to combine his story with Evan's story because they're both transmasculine people. And there are some tie-ins to some other things that we've heard from other people's stories, things that correlate well with Evan's story, which we all just heard. And just a really great, Emery's email was just really great all on its own.
Yeah, I think this one was one of the standouts that we got, one of the standout stories. So I'm
they
excited
all stood
to-
out to me, but yes, I really did love this one. And I know that sometimes think that people who hear our show think that we're their friends. Because we share so much about ourselves, especially me on this show, people feel like they know us. I feel like I know Emery because he is just so great in the Eden Exodus group.
Very sweet story, or like very powerful story, very moving story. I don't know if sweet's the right word. Well, it's a powerful story. It's a strong story. I am honored to be reading this story. So you will hear the story from this man in a man's voice, which will be fun, which will be good. So I'm going to start this off, okay?
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so this is from Emery, and he says, I honestly struggled whether to send you anything at all, partially because of the possibility of my old name, and partially because I don't know how people will react, but I think this needs to be heard. Well, I think this needs to be heard too as well after having read it. A small amount of background. I grew up in the IBLP. I faced physical, emotional, sexual, and spiritual abuse at the hands of my parents, grandparents, and pastors. I was sent to a conversion therapy camp and then placed in an arranged marriage. My husband was severely abusive and caused me to have a stillbirth. I had 3 living children and several miscarriages before leaving at age 28. So, the thing I want to tell your listeners is that I left. I didn't have the words to describe who I was. I knew I wasn't attracted to men. I knew I didn't feel like a girl. I grew up so sheltered. I didn't know what trans was. I didn't even know the meaning of gay or lesbian. The only times I heard them was in reference to the causes of hurricanes and a vague reference to waffles that I still don't understand. It makes me equally angry and sad to think about. Even after leaving, it took me a long time to get to a point where I had vocabulary to tell anyone what I felt. First, I was able to admit that despite being sent to a year-long camp to try and cure my same-sex attraction sin, I was still not straight. I decided to stop trying to fit into that box and figure that part out. That led to a string of relationships, most of them unhealthy, followed by a second marriage that followed many of the patterns I knew in my life. I won't go into details, but towards the end of our marriage, my husband transitioned from female to male. It was like a light that came on for me. That moment finally gave me those words to describe who I am. As much as I was hurt by so many things in my marriage, I wouldn't take it back. I have been in therapy now for a decade, in specific, cult deprogramming therapy for 2 years. I have been clean from drugs and alcohol for 2.5.
Congratulations, Emery.
Yeah, congratulations, Emery. That's a huge accomplishment. I explored my gender in Dungeons and Dragons first. Oh, man. Shouts out to Jack Chick. Yeah, I explored my gender in Dungeons and Dragons first. I played with pronouns in that space where I was surrounded by people who cared about me. My characters allowed me to safely explore a lot. And no one has ever asked me to do real witchcraft. Weird, huh?
So strange.
That is weird. That's like Jack Chick would be extremely disappointed when hearing that. So Emery goes on to say, I did drag with friends both as a drag queen and as a drag king. And then I started slowly telling people. I made an appointment, then canceled it and repeated the process several times with a clinic. And finally started hormones. This month, June, marks 2 years on testosterone for me. I am the proud parent of a pansexual non-binary 16-year-old and a gender non-conforming pansexual 14-year-old who are growing up with all the words I never have. Life is good and getting better every day. Anyways, I can truly say I love you both and that this podcast has brought so much healing and peace. All my love from Emery. Well, Emery, we love you too. Thank you for sending us this story. It was an honor to read it and an honor to put your words and put your story into the airway.
Yeah, we love you too, Emery. Emery is one of our listeners. It's like, okay, well, if I ever met this person, pending consent, I would love to get a hug from this listener.
Yes.
This is just my buddy.
What a good dude.
And I forgot to say at the beginning, Emery uses he and they pronouns.
Yeah, forgot to say that. Yeah, but
and when somebody uses two sets of pronouns, usually you can just pick.
Yeah, you can pick, which is nice. It makes it easy.
But no, that was a fantastic story, and
raising the next generation—that's the thing.
And being able to like, I like the part about being able to play with pronouns in Dungeons and Dragons because that's something that. Hold on.
Speaking of the next generation, yeah, that reminds me of what I was going to say was that part of it is that makes us so happy about reading the story is that we have the story of. Somebody raising children, you know, in an environment that is so different to the one that they grew up in and with the advantages that they never had and with the validation that they never had. And so, Emery, happy for you, happy for your children, happy for your family.
Yeah. And what I was going to say about Dungeons and Dragons is I think that's something that I've had a few friends reach out to me like, hey, I don't know if I might be trans. I don't know if I'm non-binary. I don't know what's going on with me. And the first thing I always suggest is just find a place to play with it. Just like introduce yourself to a new person and use different pronouns or use a different name and just see how it feels. Because having a safe place to play with that can be a real good indicator if it's the right thing for a person or not.
That's true. Because with D&D, what you're making up a pretend character, but then you can just right. say, well, this character can be anybody who I want it to be. But if this character is me, then maybe, you know, I want to see, you know, is this character expressing myself and my identity in a way that I would want to express it myself, my identity public. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's just and I think having that safe space, you know, I hear. Oh, chuckle. But just a pacifier. She's fine. She just likes to spit her pacifier out.
She's loud. She wants to be on the radio. Yeah, everybody, thanks for tuning into this episode. I know this one's been on the short side, but I think we had a really good interview, a really good conversation with Evan and Emery. If you're out there listening, your letter hit us right in the heart. So thanks for sending that. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you to everyone who's been sending in letters. We've been enjoying all of them so much. I always text Gabi or he texts me, whichever one of us sees the letter in our inbox first. Like, we got another letter, go read it.
Yeah.
It's been exciting and fun.
And we've really tried to, you know, we've been trying to, I think originally we planned on doing like one letter per show, but like if you send us one, like we will do our best to try to get it into an episode because we are like, we just really like them and we don't want to pick and choose.
Yeah, and your stories are important, and they're inspiring to us, and this has just been the most enjoyable idea we ever had.
Yeah, and we might have to do something more like that. Also, in that same vein, keep sending us emails to leavingedenpod@gmail.com, because coming up next month, I think we're going to do another Q&A episode. So send us emails. Please send us emails with your questions about all of this stuff, and we will try to answer them if we can. Oh, Thursday, tune in Thursday. We're going to be doing another homework episode, a reverse homework episode. I'm going to be reviewing the Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which I have watched once, and I am about to watch again, and we're about to record that tomorrow, so that's going to be really fun.
Yes, because when you're going to review or make commentary on content, you do actually listen or watch all the way through it, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this is something really important to you. So I want to make sure I get the details. I watch it once, watch it twice, make sure I get all the details down so we can really talk about it.
Yeah. And jokes aside, Hedwig is like a super important piece of media to me personally. So I'm excited to discuss that on Thursday.
Yeah. And that'll be super fun. You can follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, at Leaving Eden Podcast, and on Twitter it is at Leaving Eden Pod. You can join our Facebook group, which is called Eden Exodus. You can go there. People post in there literally multiple times every day with their stories or just their thoughts on something that they listen to. It's super fun. We've been having a lot of great discussions
the
in there.
Spiciest ex-Baptist memes.
Yes.
The ones that are too spicy for other ex-fundamentalists.
Yeah, that's true. 100%. And if you want to hear extended episodes that are also uncensored and also see what Sadie thinks about The Handmaid's Tale, she's been writing and putting stuff on our Patreon. You can access all of that stuff if you go to patreon.com/leavingedenpodcast. All of our Patreon earnings for the month of June are going to the Howard Brown Health Center in Chicago, Illinois, which provides healthcare to the LGBTQ community. So it's going to a good cause. Sadie, do you want to plug your social media?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at HellYesSadie, on Instagram at Sadie Carpenter Music, and also on TikTok at HellYesSadie as soon as I figure out how to get my username switched over, because I figured out who stole my TikTok username and it was me. So I just have to get back into that account and then I'll be able to have like my actual handle on TikTok. It's going to be great once I figure it out. Because, you know, I have all the time in the world with a 3-month-old baby.
Oh God. Yeah.
I also wanted to do a really quick note here. A lot of people have been messaging me on my personal Facebook. I'm not telling you not to. There's no rule against it. It's fine. It's just that if you're not my Facebook friend, you end up in my message requests. So if you have something to say that's time sensitive that you want to get my eyes on, send it to the podcast social media. I'm more likely to see it, you know, in less than 2 weeks.
Well, if you want to follow me on social media, all of my handles are the same on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Clubhouse at GAVRIELHACOHEN. And until Thursday, we're going to talk to you guys again on Thursday, and that'll be super fun. So stay tuned for that homework episode. And then next week, what episode are we doing next week? We're doing
next week we have tons of listener stories, including one that made us both cry, so both that was like a double points listener story.
Yeah.
And then we also, I'm going to be giving you a brief history of conversion therapy, the ex-gay movement, and the XX-gay movement.
Surprise, surprise, praying the gay away does not really work.
Not the most effective option.
Not particularly effective. Yeah, so that's going to be that. And so be sure you tune in for that. We hope that you guys have a good day, an enjoyable day. Bye-bye. But old rolling river of time, you've healed me in too many days. No regrets, no confusion, there'll be no pollution. I'm so thankful I've decided to change my ways. I'm so thankful I decided to change my life.